Welcome, everyone, to episode 329 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
Welcome, team. Good to see you all.
Joy.
Yeah.
Don't all speak at once.
I know. I was like, who's going to go first?
I'm having issues saying co-host today. Apparently, I can't talk in general. So there is that. So this should be interesting. Considering we're talking about one of the talkiest movies of the year. So our movie of the week is Heretic. If you listened to the show a couple of weeks ago, you probably know that by now. So this is Scott Beck and Brian Woods' new film. I was going to say feature film debut, but it's not. They've made a bunch of shit before.
They made 65 with Adam Driver, which was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It was fine.
It was also not good.
It was fine.
It was fine, but like I expected crap from that film.
It was dumb as all hell, but it was still fun.
And that movie is like 68 minutes without credits.
The one advantage of these guys is they know when to stop. Like, their movies don't overstay their welcome, because 65 ends just as you think, okay, I cannot take any more of this crap, and then it stops and you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad. It still wasn't good. It still was not good. Let's be honest,
it's almost called pushing your luck them.
pretty much
like I all right, good thing you ended there, that's about all I can take of this.
Just for the record, it's
so
like
annoying.
It's like Citizen Kane compared to the Adam Driver film from this year, but
65 alleviates him from about, I don't know, 30% of Megalopolis, but he also has a bit of Ferrari to contend with. Like, there's a lot working against Adam Driver right now.
He is still Adam Driver, though. The people still love him.
He is, but I was not feeling the love after Megalopolis, and I was not feeling the love after Ferrari. So I don't know.
Okay, so
Megalopolis on VOD on Tuesday.
Oh boy. But to set new records.
Yeah.
New record lows, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
I need to see it though, because it seems like it's the most polarizing film of the year. Like, people either are raving about it or raving about how terrible it is.
It's like a top end cinema train wreck. You know what I mean? It's like, it's you have to witness it. Things this year.
No, but there are people who are legitimately saying that it is a great film, and they are trying to defend it. So that's what makes me curious, because it's like either complete crap or people are actually defending it as a great film. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like those are worth seeing.
I agree. So let's talk about Heretic, which we will start by, we'll preface by saying that Steve hasn't seen this.
No.
And the movie is very, very fresh. It just opened on Friday. So we're going to keep this spoiler free for the benefit of everyone. We might talk about it again on the next show so we can discuss the ending a little bit more.
Yes.
In more depth. But let's talk a little bit about this movie, which when it opens, I said to Dan, I think that's Squamish.
Totally Squamish. Our whole theater said that.
Yes.
It's so Squamish.
Exactly. So we did stay through the entire credits only to discover the end. So we're shot here. So no big surprise. But it was kind of fun to be able to say, oh, okay. I can get that.
This isn't much of a spoiler, but is that staircase is in Squamish?
I don't know. Because I've never seen that staircase. It could be. My feeling, it probably is not.
Okay.
Like, I can't see, like, I haven't, I like, admittedly, I don't live in Squamish. I've only been through there a few times and we've stayed there once. So I'm not super familiar with the neighborhoods. Maybe somebody that's familiar with Squamish will be able to pinpoint us to where exactly that staircase is. But for sure, the street scenes with the chief in the background and the mountains on the other side, very, very clearly Squamish. And of course, the chief it's the chief, like, you can, if you're local, you can recognize that mountain pretty much everywhere, which is kind of shocking. But one of the things before we talk about the movie itself, we never go to movies on the weekend. We generally try to go during the week, but the week was really busy and we didn't get a chance to. So we went on a Saturday, 1 o'clock screening in the middle of the day. It was the first screening of the day. So we had booked the little we paid extra for the little private buddy things because I'm like, I don't want to talk to people. This is Marina at the movies. I don't want to talk to anybody. But I was shocked by the breakdown of this audience. Maybe it's just the way audiences are now, but there were a lot of older people in the audience. And then I thought after the movie, I'm like, okay, this kind of makes sense. Because it's not really like your, could you even call it, it's a horror movie, right? Is it a horror movie?
Yeah, I would say it's a horror movie. I mean. Yeah.
I don't know. Like it's definitely like
a thriller.
Playing.
I like thriller.
Yeah, I think that that's probably more like it.
The breakdown of the rating says it has gore in it from a guy that hasn't seen it. Yeah. So I would put gore in a horror category generally.
So it like I was just surprised by how much older the audience skewed, and I have a feeling part of it is also the whole religious angle of the story, and it is such a talky movie. Like it starts like the girls start talking on the bench, and it's nonstop until the credits roll. It's pretty impressive, actually. And Dan's like, Hugh Grant gives the best delivery of all time. He's like, he's the best speaker, period. Like he could read anything and it would be interesting, and I could go with that.
This is a great performance for him because it's so the switch between kind of charming and malevolent is great. Like, and it's constant. It's like sometimes because it's not like he starts charming and then becomes evil. It's like he's always back and forth between the two through the whole film.
Yeah.
He's really great to watch in this. He's chewing up that scenery like nobody's business.
Wanted more from this. I wanted a lot more from this. It's got a really good setup, and then it just something happens at the end. Sorry, Steve. I don't want to say it. I just wanted more from this. It seems like a really big missed opportunity. But Hugh Grant and the two women are really good too.
Thatcher.
Yeah, Sophie Thatcher.
From Yellowstone.
And Chloe East. Great.
Yellow Jackets.
That's right. It's not Yellowstone. Yeah, Yellow Jackets plays Natalie. And Chloe East is fucking phenomenal in Fablemans. She's scene stealer.
And she's almost unrecognizable here. Like the hair really, like for a while, I was like, who is that? She looks vaguely familiar from somewhere and I could not pinpoint it.
She is very believable as a young Mormon.
Yes.
Like way more believable than the other.
I thought that pairing was really interesting. And of course, the way the movie plays out, you kind of think it's going to go the other way. They play with perception, but expectations really well. Because you kind of think, okay, well, I kind of know where this is going, and then it doesn't go in that direction. And then you think you know where it's going, and then it still doesn't go in that direction. I do like that it's constantly sort of taking up a left turn. And then I did not see, like, there was some third act stuff that I did not see coming. But then I was kind of like, I'm kind of with you, Bill. I'm like, does this really work? Not quite really sure how I feel about this, but okay, it kind of makes sense. I mean, and the fact that the only escape out of that house is that one thing, like that one, I don't know. That whole thing was a bit
weird. Transplant the ending of Immaculate onto this film, that movie would fucking rule.
Oh, I still really like Immaculate though, so I don't know.
I would say though, like, what I liked about this film was that it does play with your expectations and it doesn't go in the directions that you think. I mean, I don't know, Steve, now we're setting you up, but, but one of the things, like, as we were watching the film, like finally, when it gets to the scene in the trailer where the two girls are at the two doors and they have to choose a door, I was like, man, like, why did they put that in the trailer? Like, there's been so much lead up to this. And then they put, like, that's what they put in the trailer. I was like, they wrecked the whole movie. And then, turns out they didn't wreck the whole movie. I did really enjoy that because they totally got me. Like, I thought we were getting really close to climax at the doorway scene, and it was not climax.
There's also some really cool music stuff I think you're going to dig in this, Steve. I know that sounds weird, but there's some cool music stuff in this film I think you're really going to dig.
I love shit like that.
Yeah, so. It's like weird stuff that it's like very... like niche, Like you I don't know if you might have heard of it, but I'd never heard of it. And I listened to it. I'm like, holy fuck. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So
there's some stuff in here. This is totally like every university student in like first and second year that's taken like one or two theology classes. And, you know, you have that argument in basically after class for 3 hours where you just talk around in circles and you're like in the same place when you end. And you're like, did we really just argue this for 3 hours and we still haven't come? Like, this felt like that to me. Like, this totally was a throwback to like those college days where all we did was just talk about stuff, apparently thinking we knew all of the answers, not knowing anything because we'd read like three books and we're like, yeah, we're experts. We're not experts. But there's just, it has that feeling of, I totally know where this conversation is going. I've had this discussion. And then it gets to the end, you're like, oh, okay, well, I kind of didn't see that one coming. I didn't read that. But I mean, the fact that like both women, like one certainly comes across as being more like worldly and knowledgeable. Now I'm getting into weird territory. Sorry, I'm not going to say any more because Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I have to wipe some stuff from my memory in the next 4 days.
I really enjoyed it. We thought it was quite good. The ending is still a bit, I'm unsure. That third act is a bit weird, but overall, I still think it nails the ending for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. Though I think some people were a bit surprised. Like, there were some kids behind this that were like, that was it?
Yeah, like with the
I
like,
wanted it to be gorier.
There's been like a bit of a horror renaissance lately, and a bunch of these kids are going to go and see this movie and all of a sudden get a history lesson. They're going to be really pissed off, and I'm kind of there for that.
And that's why I liked it. I like movies that kind of push the expectation, and this one I did not expect to get like 90 minutes or whatever it is, or 2 hours of basically talking nonstop, and I was there for all of it. Like, yeah, give it all to me. It's great.
But also, I want this on a double bill with Barbarian. You should not enter. Just basements you should not enter. That's the genre of these two movies.
I love it.
Yeah, I think it's good. I just don't think it's great. And it played Fantastic Fest as a secret screening, and people were like talking about it as like a really great horror film. And I don't think it's quite there. Because as Maria said that, and I said, I don't think the third act quite works, but it's fine. It's good. I think I wanted a little more from it. I also don't think that, people are talking about Hugh Grant for Oscar. Can we stop just saying everybody deserves an Oscar nomination? He's good, but come on.
And let's be honest, like, horror movies very, very rarely get any love for performances.
No.
For anything for that matter.
We were just, for my horror podcast, Tremble, we were just doing Black Swan. And it's probably one of the rare, and there's an argument to say that it's not horror, but there are things that are definitely horror about that film, and especially body horror. And it's like the rare foray into that genre. And it won an Academy Award for Natalie Portman. So maybe that's the closest to the sun that horror has flown at this point.
Silence of the Lambs, but that's, I guess, procedural with horror elements again.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right?
Okay, I would argue Silence of the Lambs is more of a horror movie than Heretic is.
And plus, if they were into like giving stuff to horror films, Isabella Johnny would have a fucking Oscar for
Possession.
Possession.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. I but at the same time, the filter of the Academy of critics of everything in 1981 was definitely not the same whatsoever. Like, Possession had to like grow like a fungus on people. Be like, oh yeah, This performance was fucking insane.
It continues to grow never like a fungus.
Be reproduced or redone. Like, even still, when I see a Jenny show up and stuff, I'm like, oh, there she is.
Don't worry, they're making a remake for next year. So
yeah, Parker Finn is doing it with Robert Pattinson.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll watch it. Just because I like weird, but
I can't remember. I just saw Isabella Gianni in something too, and I'm trying to totally spacing on what it was. Oh, she's in The Perfect Couple on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah. She's one of the main, like the main party guests in that show. Yeah.
I've seen it and I don't remember. So I, now yeah. I'm like, what?
I
didn't
see it, so.
Oh, I didn't
her even character's name is that Isabel. That
I didn't even clock that was her, like the older French woman who.
Yeah. Is,
yeah. Yeah. I totally didn't even clock that was her.
No, me either.
Yeah.
Go figure. So I don't know. I guess Melissa and I are higher on Heretic than Bill is.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought it was a really fun movie. Fun. I mean, I don't. Yeah, like I. Yeah, it surprised me in places. The performances were good, and like a lot of the philosophical discussion was really interesting.
Agreed. Yeah.
So, I didn't even. It wasn't until you said that this was like super dialogue heavy, like a really talking movie, that I really thought about the fact that it was a super talking movie. Like, this doesn't work without the dialogue. It is entirely dialogue driven. That really worked for me.
So, I agree. Yeah. What I think is even more fascinating is that this comes from the guys that wrote a movie with no dialogue.
I was going to say that's so funny to go from that script to this script, which must be a long fucking script from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of
that's wild. That's really wild.
It's kind of crazy.
I appreciate that.
Let's do a quiet place where there's zero talking. Well, okay, maybe a couple of words, but very little. To a movie where there is literally wall to wall talking. Like wall to wall. It starts talking and it ends talking. It's pretty great.
Okay, can I also ask you guys, did any of you clock Topher Grace in this movie?
Yes. I was like, not the first time we see him. It wasn't until he shows up at Hugh Grant's door that I was like, holy shit.
That was a surprising cameo to me.
Yes.
I'm also going to be really vague here and say that Hugh Grant does a really good imitation of a Star Wars character.
I
was very vague there.
That entire line of questioning is where Dan started like losing his shit. He's like, this is hilarious.
This might be the first film Dan's actually liked on the podcast.
Is it really? I don't know, because I am going to talk about something else at the end of the show. Well, I don't know if it's at the end of the show, whenever I finish my what we've been watching that Dan really liked as well. So,
well, and as of this podcast, there's a trailer out for Presence now, and he didn't mind that one, right?
No, he liked Presence.
Yeah, so
he didn't love it, but he liked
I was the one that hated Presence,
right? Yeah. End of January, y'all. You can make the decision yourself at the end of January. I dig it. I dig it. So
me too.
We came out on the good side of that one.
Presence bracket Paranormal Activity 11.
I think it has a lot more substance than any of the Paranormal Activities did.
I agree.
Personally. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to win this fight, so I'm going to shut up on that.
2-1.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so that's Heretic. So what else have you guys been watching?
I can rock this one because I didn't
go for it, Steve.
But Heretic at all. I think I brought up that I was watching Hunger Games, the last one on the last podcast, that I was like in the middle of it.
Yep.
I ended up on I think it's the better one in the series, to be honest. I just think it's egregiously long. It does not need to be that long.
I still think the first one is really good.
Yeah, I don't know. I just always found the series quite boring. But this one was a bit better. The next piece of Jerry Action films from Liam Neeson came out. And I had like a lower than ankle high bar for this movie when I started it. It's called Absolution. And it's the same guy, Hans Petter Moland. He did In Order of Disappearance with Stellan Skarsgård, which is a fucking phenomenal film. That movie
rules.
That movie is so awesome. So darkly funny. Like so funny. And then he, for some stupid fucking reason, remade it himself with Liam Neeson called Cold Pursuit. And it was just awful. Awful. Horrible film. So I had like no hopes for this one. And It's Liam Neeson playing like a former fighter turned like gangster heavy that is suffering from CTE and losing his memory. So it's like that movie he did, Memory, which was very on the nose, and decides that he needs to try and get in touch with his kids and everything as he's starting to lose everything. And actually, it's not terrible. Like, I didn't fully hate this movie, and maybe it's because the low bar was there. Maybe it's because Neeson is actually kind of solid in this film, or that he rocks a pretty good mustache in this movie. I don't know. Maybe it's the power of the mustache alone. But as Bill brought up before on the previous podcast, it wasn't terrible. Maybe it's because I set myself up for very, very, very low expectations. But I
love how we're to the point where Liam Neeson movies are either terrible or not terrible.
Well, and I want to have good energy for him because I want to have good energy for that Naked Gun remake that's coming, because Liam Neeson can do comedy pretty well. Like, I think he's just dry and intimidating enough to do good comedy. So I don't know, but this is better than I thought. I got to check out We Live in Time, and this film excels on the fact that it's Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh, and I am so on board with any character they want to be within moments. And that's how this movie plays out. Like, I felt really attached and hooked into their characters very quickly. This movie actually fully got me in the tear mode in one pivotal scene that I thought was really well executed. And it felt like, I mean, their chemistry is insane. The love story aspect didn't feel like overly cornball, which can mean death to a movie, which I'll get to in a few movies ahead. I really dug We Live in Time, and Crowley does a really nice job with this film for sure.
What did you think of the split narrative?
I enjoyed that. I really liked it.
The people I saw it with were really confused for like the first half hour. I guess they don't watch movies, but yeah. It was just, I don't know. They weren't vibing with it. I was digging it. So
yeah, I liked it. I didn't feel like how disjointed the story comes across. I didn't feel like I was getting lost anywhere with it. Like that Outrun movie, I was like having to piece stuff together a lot more. We Live in Time still runs in a great narrative for being out of order. Yeah. It felt very effective. I also watched a Turkish film called About Dry Grasses.
Oh, Neri Bilge Ceylan.
Yes. Yeah.
I saw that at VIFF 2 years ago on the final day.
Really?
So yeah, I was bone tired.
Yeah. I can imagine going through this film being super tired. I really can't, because it's a really well told film about men being pieces of shit when their egos are nudged or pushed in any sort of way, and how they lash out and become just like a horrible like monster of a person. Toxic masculinity on full alert in this film. The runtime is a little much.
That's the thing with all of his movies, though. I think his storytelling is really interesting, but man, some of them are
there's some stuff that we didn't even fully need. There's a lot of stretched out shit in this movie. It's still a really solid film. As far as international film goes, it's a film that should be seen. It's a little punishing in parts. Stephen Kostanski's follow-up to Psycho Goreman. And this is like, Psycho Goreman's a high bar for me. So it's like, it's one of my favorite movies of that year for sure. So Frankie Frico is the next one. And it's like a Gremlins movie crossed with like 976 Evil, crossed with like three or four other movies. But it's Kostanski playing around with effects again. I feel like to a far lesser degree than Psycho Goreman did. And I mean, it's unfair to compare both movies because Francofrico is such a lesser film. It's still fun, but the ending completely ruined it for me. It has this kind of all's well that ends well type of thing that really fucking pissed me off. And yeah, I don't know. I wanted more from it, but maybe it's like one of those films where you like make like your like best film and then everything else is just like not quite there, you know? So I love Psycho Goreman so much. It's so ridiculous. I watched the retrospective documentary Getting Lost on the series Lost. I totally forgot that they were called out for having a toxic writer's room, like season 3 or 4, like sexism, racism, like heavy misogyny, all this shit. And I mean, through this documentary, like Lindelof, like apologizes for it, but just, I don't know. It's as much as I like Lindelof as a writer, usually, you know, Prometheus aside, and all shit like that. I don't know. I thought he didn't come off too well in it. And it's missing a bunch of principal cast. Like Matthew Fox isn't involved in this one. No Harold Perrineau, which is like, kind of seems odd. Who else is missing? There's a few people definitely missing out of it, but it also feels a little like made for cable, like not, this isn't like the HBO like Sopranos one or anything. This is definitely a lesser quality. Speaking of high quality docs, Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. I got the For Your Consideration presser from Warner on this one and was super pumped to check it out because I know it's not going to play here in Penticton. And I really, really loved it. I think it's a well-told biopic documentary about a very remarkable human being for sure. And I had no idea how close him and Robin Williams were. And Glenn Close, like when they deal with the death of Christopher Reeve and Robin Williams has just like, they play his whole eulogy and it's just so fucking sad, like funny as Robin Williams is, but so sad. And then Glenn Close is like, Robin that day was the saddest human being I've ever seen in my entire life. His whole world had been broken. And if Chris hadn't have died, I think Robin would still be around today. And I was like, holy fuck.
But it's Robin Williams. So he walks up to do a speech and does a stem cell joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, wow. I miss you, Robin Williams. You were great.
So much. So much.
Yeah. Good doc. I really liked it too, actually.
It's so yeah. Good. Okay, let's take it all off a cliff, everybody. I saw Robert Zemeckis' new film Here. Instead of Heretic, all we needed is another 3 letters, and I could have seen a better film, clearly. Because they didn't do an early screening for Heretic, so instead I saw last week's film, which is Here, and I was pretty much done with this film, like 10 minutes in.
I saw it, too. What was with the picture-in-picture box thing they were doing the entire film, dude?
That was how he was going to transition to different time periods throughout it.
Which, I know, but whether, come on.
Only at first was going to be prehistoric, which is like, okay, great. And then to this this original indigenous story until the Franklin family, because inexplicably this house that they're in is across the street from like the nephew of Benjamin Franklin or some shit. It's all so fucking loose. And the movie goes exactly where you think it's going to go with exactly the same cliched and corny dialogue and terrible script and just so much schmaltz that you feel your face is being coated with icing as the film goes on. And it's just exactly what you think it's going to be. It's like the board game of life on screen in front of you in the most who gives a fuck movie I've ever seen. And I don't care if Tom Hanks thinks I'm a cocksucker because of it.
Yeah. I like that he said that on Conan's podcast. So what was with that CG, sir?
Oh my God. It's ugly. This movie is not this movie is ugly at every turn. It is never a good looking film, especially during the indigenous scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, and a completely shoehorned in plot of a black family dealing with all of the issues in modern America right now, just because it adds nothing to the story. Like, absolutely nothing is added to the story out of it, because I believe the central story is supposed to be Tom Hanks and his family, like his dad, Paul Bettany, and Kelly Riley, who I didn't realize it was Kelly Riley for a bit into the film. But this movie is so fucked. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. It got through into a major studio release. It feels like a pet project that went way too far.
Zemeckis fell in love with tech like 20 years ago and lost his way.
Storytelling.
Yeah, lost his way. Like this has some, like, he's trying techniques in this film that just don't work.
Absolutely.
He's I can't remember the last. Well, I said I liked Flight the last podcast. I said that,
yeah.
But yeah, that didn't really have CG in it. So I guess that's his last like real like plot movie.
And it's not amazing. It's a good film. It's a good movie. Amazing.
Mostly because Denzel kicks ass in it.
Yeah, but, exactly.
This is just a complete miss. I watched the trailer and I said, just from a trailer, I could tell it was the worst film of the year.
Yeah.
I think it actually might be the worst film I've seen this year.
Far as annoying me quickly into it, yeah, I'd have to say it needles you pretty quickly on. And another thing that's just completely fucking ridiculous about this whole movie is the blocking of everything. To keep it in this room, it's ridiculously like
the camera moved in like the third act and I was like, what the what?
I know when it did. Yeah.
I can tell you how the studio greenlit and gave the money to make this. Look at the cast.
Yeah.
And then it was written by fucking Eric Roth. Like, seriously? I was looking it up. I'm like, who wrote this?
I was shocked when I saw that credit at the end.
What is up with that?
How can you write Dune and then write this movie?
This is from a graphic novel, right? Or something like that? How bad can this graphic novel be?
And just to take all the important instances in a family's life, talking weddings and arrivals of children, I think, and to put them in the same location is egregiously stupid. Like, are you fucking kidding me? This living room housed all of these life-making events. Are you like, what?
And don't worry, Paul Bettany's character is deaf.
Oh, I love Paul Bettany.
So do I.
So deeply in my heart. And I felt horrible for him because we've seen Tom Hanks in bad movies. I mean, he did Hologram for a King. Okay. And like he's done bad shit. He did Inferno. So we're allowed to suffer him a bad movie.
Wait, actually, wasn't Paul Bettany in that too?
Yeah,
he was actually.
That's true.
Come on now. True. I don't know. I thought the concept was interesting, but from the trailer, you can tell this thing is going to suck. No. And, I mean, Zemeckis hasn't made a good movie in a long time, especially when he leans into the tech. I mean, I appreciate that, you know, he's an older guy that's trying new things. Like, the fact that he keeps up with the changing technology and is always like willing to give it a go is, you know, it's admirable, but at some point you also have to realize that you don't have to use every new piece of technology in your movie because it's just going to detract from your movie. So, but we've learned that he has zero self-control. So there's that.
Well, and also speaking of Zemeckis, there seems to be this internet trend to say that retroactively What Lies Beneath is a good movie, and it's fucking not. Like, can we stop that one now, please? It's not a good movie.
Dude, I don't know. Like, honestly, the performance, I just saw that again the other day. I always liked that movie. It's not horrible. It's not great. The performances are pretty decent.
I remember seeing it in theaters and being like, this movie sucks. I was like... so especially that third act, the reveal into her drowning her in the bathtub was like, fuck this. Like, this is fucking stupid.
Zemeckis should have to give back his Oscar and give it to Tarantino for Pulp Fiction for this fucking film, actually. I'll tell you
because I mean, people's opinion on Forrest Gump has definitely changed since 1994 as well. So,
yeah,
I would agree with you there. I watched a film called Black Box Diaries. It played Doxa this year.
This looks so good. I cannot wait to track this down.
It was so good. I can send you the screener for it. It's really, really, really solid. I mean, it is a brutal timeline of seeking some semblance of justice in a system pivoted against women in Japan, because they're encouraged not to speak and they become pariahs when they do about sexual assault. And the sexual assault comes from a high ranking official that has ties to Prime Minister Abe. And it's intense. This film's intense. It starts with a shitload of trigger warnings, which I think are very warranted. But the viciousness in which everybody comes after this journalist for just coming forward with their truth is so crazy. And I mean, with the battles that North America has gone through and will undoubtedly continue to go through, it looks like an even bigger mountain for them to get through. So it's intense. It's an intense film for sure. I watched my 4K. I'd already seen it before, but I watched my 4K of Nightmare on Elm Street. That movie still rocks. I haven't seen it in a very long time. Tina's dream sequence to death sequence is still horror iconicness through and through. It's such a great scene, especially the face tear. It's just beautiful. I really love it. And you can tell why it was the film that built New Line. It makes a lot of sense.
My favorite scene is still the mom being pulled through the door.
The little hole. It's so cool. And I read something when the Freddy top comes down on the convertible, they all jump and scream. It's because it came down so fast and they had no idea. And it was the first take and they kept that take.
How does the 4K look?
It's good. It's pretty clean. A lot of these Warner Brothers ones are really clean. The Purple Rain one was really good, even though it made me laugh so much because
that movie's not as good as we remember.
No, especially the prince trying to be a tough guy at the Lake Minnetonka, and he's like sitting there.
Let's be honest, that movie was never good. But Prince is great.
Morris Day and the Time are fucking great in that movie.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. And then the abuse. To the Apollonia in that movie.
I'd heard some bad things about the Nightmare on Elm Street transfer, so I was just curious.
It's not. I thought it was okay. I don't have the 4K TV, but it still looks pretty solid on my screen. Another old Blu-ray that I got sent to me that I hadn't got around to in its entire existence. I watched The Peacemaker with George Clooney and Nicole Kidman from 1997, a film that is definitely indicative of that time period. I think that is the very first DreamWorks film.
It might be.
The very first theatrical release would be that and Ants, I think.
Yeah.
Were the first
ones. That makes sense, actually.
And the third act of this movie just falls into the most like protocol blowing, ethic blowing, like craziness. Like they're trying to sniper this terror, the villain at the end of the movie with the bomb. And there's a girl on dad's shoulders in front of him. They're like, just take the shot. And I'm like, the fuck? They're gonna blow away this girl? Like
these really bad like 2000s movies just make me appreciate the cheesiness of the 80s like thrillers, which we look back on. Like, I'm sorry, The Net is silly, but it still plays so well.
I saw the Net in theaters.
The Pelican Brief, super silly, also plays super well.
Come on, Gresham era.
Yeah, the Gresham era was like kicking ass, man. Those movies are awesome and they hold up really well.
The Peacemaker, I would say not so much. And it's a large example of like asshole guy being a piece of shit to his lady boss, but somehow they still end up working together in the end and caring about each other. And it's just so funny how wild it goes in the third act. And
yeah,
it's ridiculous. And then I have had this Blu-ray for a bit sitting on my shelf, so I decided to throw it in. The Marsh King's Daughter, which is Neil Berger's film that he did with Daisy Ridley and Ben Mendelsohn.
What's that like?
It was not bad. It was not terrible. It was a far different film than I thought it was going to be. I don't like that they gave Garrett Hedlund like fucking nothing to do.
Their loss.
Because I like Garrett Hedlund a lot, except he's really pushing my nerves on the new season of Tulsa King. I hate it when shows completely like lose steam in their second seasons, become just like corny messes. Unless that's what Tulsa King is doing. Especially
when your episodes are literally 26 minutes. Like,
I don't even understand that.
You can't even maintain 26 minutes.
I know. I was pissy when Mayor of Kingstown did like an hour, like a 36, 37 minute episode. I was like, what the fuck, Jeremy Renner? But like Tulsa King, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, okay, I'm ready for this episode to end.
I'm ready for it to be over.
Yeah, that's cool. I've had enough of Dwight.
Yeah.
But it's not bad. It plays into more of a thriller than I thought it was going to. And Daisy Ridley's okay. She's always just seems just okay. The one where she was in The Office Worker was I forget what it was called even, but I think that's the one that pushed her most dramatically. This was okay. And Mendelsohn's great. I really, really, really like Ben Mendelsohn. And I love Gil Birmingham. Gil Birmingham is like, he's in Yellowstone. He's in Hell or High Water. He's just like always an actor that I appreciate every time he's in something. So, that's it for me.
That's a pretty good list.
I have a sick household here. So it's been lonely time. So I just sit and watch movies.
So I was saying before we started recording that I watched a bunch of stuff, but a lot of it was garbage, like so bad. I like so bad that I looked at the list. I'm like, I have to have seen something that's good. Like, please. And so my list is quite short, but please be mindful of the fact that I did watch a bunch of shit, like real shit that it's like not even worth talking about. But Martha, the Martha Stewart documentary on Netflix, is so good.
I watched too.
Oh, yeah. I want to see that.
So, like, that woman is freaking Teflon, but Jesus, like, this, I had no idea. Like, to me, Martha Stewart just emerged one time, like, fully formed as this, like, homemaker, TV, like, rich white lady telling all the other white ladies how to organize their homes and cook beautiful meals. And it all seemed so ridiculous. But then I was like, oh, but I can learn how to tie a Christmas bow. I don't know. She's Martha Stewart. She was always just kind of like there. I had no idea that she'd had like a past.
She worked on the stock market.
I know, like,
I was just like, what?
Martha Stewart? I don't know. I actually thought the documentary was really good. It was very insightful. The fact that she's just like Martha Stewart dropping F-bombs is the best thing ever. I don't know. I just, it makes me joyous to see a woman that is like people think is like so refined and well put together, just like laying it out there. I don't know. I thought it was fabulous. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I recommended it to a bunch of people. I'm like, you need to see the Martha Stewart documentary. It's fantastic.
I was also crushing pretty hard on Martha Stewart.
She was a good looking lady.
Yeah.
I mean, she's aged really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really impressed by that doc. I really, really, really enjoyed it. High and Low, the John Galliano, the Kevin MacDonald documentary on John Galliano, which is on Mubi. Thank you, Melissa, for the hookup. I did sign up for my free 3 months or whatever it is. And of course, I log in and the first thing that comes at me is like, you might like this. And I'm like, yes, thank you. I've been trying to watch this for a year. So this is fantastic. So it really fascinating documentary, again, about a really interesting individual. I like the backstory, like the history of Galliano and when he came up. And there was this whole scene in fashion at the time that he was coming up in the 90s. And it felt like a real, like, small group of people against the world, which I thought was really interesting. And then, of course, it was the drugs and alcohol. I mean, the second and third act are really interesting because it's really about his coming to terms with what basically got him disowned from the industry. And a lot of the comments, you have to realize, they may have been said while he was under the influence of something, but you don't just spew that if it doesn't have, like, if you haven't thought about it, like, it just doesn't come out of the blue. So the fact that he's come back to make some, like, real, tried to make some real, like, mends with the Jewish community and, you know, trying to understand where that hatred came from, I thought was really, really interesting. And he's very open about the whole thing. It's a very intimate conversation. Like, they must have hours and hours and hours of tape. I thought it was a really great documentary. I really, really enjoyed it. Time Cut, Hannah McPherson's new film on Netflix about a young woman who accidentally got sucked back in time just before a serial killer starts to commit mass murder. It's as good as it sounds. Like, I don't even know what to say. I needed something to watch. I really like Antonia Gentry. She's on Ginny in Georgia, which is a guilty pleasure show that I watch on Netflix as well. So I'm like, oh, she's in a movie. Let's watch this. And it's fine. It is what it is.
Was it? How does it compare to Totally Killer? Because that
no,
was
Totally
like,
Killer is fine.
Totally Killer is way better.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Totally Killer is actually good.
Yeah, it's fun.
This is not even like touching the torch. It's not very good. It has some fun moments, but it's very forgettable. It's very fluffy. It was fine. It was a good way to kill 90 minutes. A Mistake, Christine Jeffs' new film. So, I mean, I don't even remember the last time I saw anything from Christine Jeffs. So she made Sunshine Cleaning way back in the day. She made that Sylvia Plath documentary, not a documentary, the biopic, which was pretty good. And so this new film stars Elizabeth Banks with a weird Australian accent. So she plays a doctor. She has a couple of trainees. Something goes wrong in the operating room and then shit happens. It's a very like straightforward drama where this doctor basically steps up and takes ownership of something that she didn't actually do to save the career and basically try to save the life of a young doctor. It's really interesting. It's not particularly memorable. It's very gray. I think it tries to do some interesting things visually with the fact that it mostly takes place in like a hospital and operating rooms, but I don't know. It doesn't fully work. And Elizabeth Banks is good, but it's not really memorable. And her accent kind of comes in and out a lot, which is a little bit distracting. Overall, not great, but also not terrible. Piece by Piece, which I loved. The Morgan Neville documentary on Pharrell Williams. Yeah, Bill's laughing. I thought this was really good. It's a really interesting and innovative way to do a documentary. I think it sometimes works better than other times, but overall, I really enjoyed it. And Pharrell's just like a cool cat. Like, I don't know. This guy, like, just, I saw him on Graham Norton the other day, and I'm like, he's sitting on a couch with Tom Hanks and I can't even remember whoever else. And I'm like, you are by far the coolest person on this couch. He's just like chilling out. And when he talks, he just, I don't know. There's just something magnetic about him. There really is. Like he talks like this and maybe that's why you kind of just feel like you want to lean in a little bit more. It's super impressive. It's super impressive.
When I listen to music, I see colors.
Yeah, he's got me.
Shut up.
He's got misophonia. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
He's got misophonia.
But it's so cheese. So cheese. I hate that movie.
But I don't think it is. I think that's just Pharrell Williams. Like,
wait for the top 10 list at the end of the year. I got more for this film. I got more.
God damn.
I really enjoyed it, and I really like the sort of like behind the scenes bits with Morgan Neville when they're talking about, you want to do this as a what? I kind of wish, I hope that if they ever do release this thing on some sort of physical media, that there is a behind the scenes of the actual video interviews, because I think those would be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Some of this thing is really fun. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And then last night we watched The Apprentice, because as you do, we've been trying to watch this thing for a week.
During a war season.
Sorry.
Yeah. Dan liked it far more than I did. I think it's really interesting, but like you guys already said, it feels kind of weird talking like this with any sort of, I don't know. It's just strange. But Sebastian Stan gives a really outstanding performance. Like the small mannerisms that he picks up on are really interesting, and you don't even really realize it until like almost the end of the movie, where you're like, wow, he really nailed, like, just even the shape of the lips when he's talking, which is, it's just the smallest thing. And the makeup is really interesting too. Because they've, like, the whole chin thing, but whatever. And yeah, Jeremy Strong is, really good. He's really, really good.
Very strong.
Yeah, really, really good. I again, I'm with you guys. I'm not really sure who this movie is for. Maybe the vaguely curious. It's really, really well done, though. Really, really well done.
Yeah, I'm sure Joe Rogan loves it. Oh, sorry, did I say that loud?
We're all screaming it, so
yeah,
pretty much, but yeah, super and really great performances overall. A really good film, just not sure who it's for. They're advertising the shit out of it, though. I can't wait to see whoever sees it on, because we still have cable, right? So it comes up on the new releases, The Apprentice. And I said to Dan, can you imagine you don't know anything about this movie? You've never heard of it. Because there are people that I'm sure have never heard of the drama around this movie. So you rent this thing, you see what it's about. Depending on which side of the fence you are, can you imagine the conversations after that? Or even in the middle of it?
I was a really big fan of the show. Where's Omarosa?
Yeah.
Oh man. And that's what I've seen.
I haven't seen a lot. I'm going to save one because I know Melissa saw it and she can take care of that one. So on Halloween, I decided I was going to try to find something I had never watched before. Kind of tough. I've seen a lot of movies. And then I was flipping through Netflix and noticed I hadn't seen The Babysitter.
Oh, shit.
I don't know why. I worship Brian Duffield. That guy is awesome. Why hadn't I seen this film? I don't know. Why is Samara Weaving a huge star? Like, even in this film, she's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's immediate power.
Yeah. Like, I didn't watch the sequel. I heard the sequel is kind of crap. But this one is surprisingly good. I'm a little shocked I hadn't seen it. But it's just a really fun film. Especially Robbie Amell is having a lot of fun in this film.
Oh, my God. He's great. He's I love him in the second movie a bit more.
Yeah.
Just some of the lines and scenes in that film. There's some ridiculous shit in that movie that makes me laugh a lot.
The kid's like, why does he have his shirt off? And he's like, just look at him. Look at him.
And in both films, I really like Bella Thorne in both movies. She's a lot of fun. And the first violent scene in the movie is like, whoa, the way it happens. You're just like, oh, yeah, I don't know. It's fun. It's fun. Might be the best thing that McGee's ever done.
I could go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally forgot it was a McGee film.
Yeah, it's a McGee film.
The credits came up like, what?
Yeah,
I hate this guy. I like this movie.
That script was floating around because I listened to the Movie Crypt with Adam Green and Joe Lynch, and that Babysitter script, it was floating around for 2 years or something before it went to McGee, because Joe Lynch at one point was trying to get it. He was trying to get a pass on it through Netflix because he'd already done that Frank Grillo movie, I think, with the Frank Grillo and Anthony Mackie one, Point Blank or whatever it was called. He really wanted to do it, and it apparently went to a couple of different people. Jordan Peele passed on it
But not because he didn't like it. It's because he knew that somebody else would do it better. And yeah, it was floating around for a bit. So it was like one of those massively talked about within the industry filmmakers for a bit. And then, yeah, McG grabbed it. And it's one of those things that it's the script already feels like it was already a home run. So if you fuck that up, then you're done.
I don't know if I said this before, but dear Hollywood, could you just put one of Brian Duffield's films in the theater? That'd be cool. Thanks.
Love and Monsters would have been fun in theaters.
Yeah. Spontaneous would have been great in the theater. Oh,
Spontaneous is a victim of the pandemic as well, though.
Yeah.
The timing was bad.
And then after I watched that, I went to Shudder looking for something. And, oh, cool. Documentary on Child's Play.
Oh, yeah. Doc of Chucky.
I didn't mind the first one. Can't really say I like the other ones, but hey, it'd be probably a pretty quick watch. I'm like 2 hours into it. I'm like, this is not, we're on part three. This should be ending. There's more movies than this. Why is this not ending? Press pause. It's 5 hours long.
Oh my god.
It's like one of those In Search of Darkness movies, which I like for making a good comprehensive list of every 80s horror movie that I've never seen. Like, I love those movies for that, but we know the Chucky movies.
I know. Like, and it's fun watching John Waters talk about Chucky. That's quite fun, but it's just so stupidly long. I turned it off and then watched an hour the next couple of days and finished it. But man, is it long? And those movies aren't good. Like, the first one's fine, but man, those other movies are not good. Bride of Chucky has its moments, and it's 5 hours long, and they don't even talk about the remake or the TV show. Like,
wow,
is there going to be a sequel?
That's fucking funny.
It's fine. Yeah. What else? I saw this documentary on Netflix called The Remarkable Life of Ebelin.
I've started this.
I really liked. This is the movie the show that made me cry.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit. This young kid named Matt Steen had this really rare muscular disorder where he was like, when he first was a kid, he could walk, but it gradually got worse and worse, and he had to be in a wheelchair for his entire life, pretty much. And he played World of Warcraft, and he was in a guild, and he died, and his guild members didn't know he was sick. So the guild had a transcript of all the stuff he had said. So the filmmakers recreated his Warcraft games out of the scripts, and it's really touching. And this might be like maybe the best documentary I've seen this year. Hands down. I freaking loved it. And nobody's talking about it. It played Vancouver. It played at Van City for like two shows and then was gone and straight to Netflix, and nobody's talking about it. So if you want to see a pretty damn good documentary, just bring a box of tissues because it's quite touching. But yeah, it's really well made, and the animation is quite stellar. And I saw Anora again with an audience that wasn't
Biff.
And
how was that?
It played really well.
Good.
Yeah, and which makes me kind of think that I think Anora might be the front runner for Oscar this year, because that thing is the most accessible film out there right now, and I don't think anything else that's coming out is going to touch it.
What, you mean Nosferatu isn't
good? No, I don't think Nosferatu is going to be the all consensus film for Oscar this year.
No, I definitely don't think so.
But yeah, the film that always wins Best Picture is the consensus film for everybody, right? That's Anora.
Yeah,
it's Anora.
I saw on one of the people I follow on Letterboxd, Ben David Grubinski, on his review said, the day that Sean Baker decides to make a screwball comedy, that's the day that the world changes.
So that's, yeah,
I can believe that.
so the first act that's like, you know, we thought really killed at VIFF, where everybody was laughing. This audience was laughing like it was Conclave.
Yes. Steve, yes. And finally, we have something vying for the funniest movie of the year. It's Anora and Conclave.
Yeah.
For sure.
But yeah, that first act, the crowd just absolutely lost their minds. And then it was like pin drop quiet in the final act, which mm-hmm. was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still don't think I'm going to give it 5 stars. I give it 4.5. I just don't think it's quite there. I just think it's a really damn great film. I just don't think it's 5-star great. Maybe my 5th rewatch will put it over the hump. I don't know. It's a really
okay. Sean will take your money in the meantime.
Yeah, totally, right?
I love the shift over to like Scorsese's After Hours. Like yeah. just that gear of the movie, I'm like, holy shit, where are we right now?
And the fact that I brought 5 friends with me and they all really dug it, and they're not yeah. like film fest people. They're just regular film goers who actually wanted to see Heretic, and I made them go see Anora, which they weren't terribly happy with until they watched the film, and they all loved it. So that's good news. And the screening was sold out. So that's even better news. Yeah, that's it for me.
Oh, that was a short list, Bill.
As I said, I have one more, but you're going to talk about it, I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
Yeah.
The pressure is on.
I liked it. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I watched sort of a mix of new and old stuff. I caught Netflix's Don't Move, which is awful. I mean,
this is why I didn't talk about it.
It's just so dumb. I mean, Finn Wittrock is a great person to hate on screen. Like, I've loved hating him on screen since American Horror Story. So I guess there's that going for it. And it does manage to maintain some tension throughout, even though like the premise is completely ridiculous and all of the plot points are completely ridiculous. So watch it if you want. It's not a long movie.
I mean, I watched it. I
else to watch. Yeah, yeah. Really stuck for something to watch.
It's not good. You know,
it's there. I rewatched Tremors, which I hadn't seen in like a million years, and nice. It still holds up really well. I really love that movie. I love Fred Ward so much. And him and Kevin Bacon are so great. They have such great chemistry together. And then I caught at the Spark Animation Festival, I caught the screening of Memoir of a Snail, which is really, that's a really lovely movie. Like, it's a movie that could have been incredibly, incredibly bleak, if not for the injection of some pretty great humor, and probably one of the greatest supporting characters of all time. Pinky is just one of the greatest characters I've ever seen.
Pinky rules.
She's just amazing. I really liked that. I thought it was so interesting that the filmmaker was so inspired by quotes. And so a lot of this film was inspired by the Kierkegaard quote that life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. And the film is essentially about the kind of like walls that we build around ourselves sometimes in order to protect ourselves, and how we're kind of the only people that can let ourselves free ourselves from that. So it's really poignant, and there's a lot in there. It's definitely animation for adults. This isn't really a kid's movie at all. But it was really sweet. It was really lovely. And Sarah Snook is phenomenal in this. I mean, there's some great voice talent in this. You've got Sarah Snook, you've got Eric Bana, you've got Dominique Pinon,
Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver in The Greatest Role.
Nick Cave.
Yeah.
Nick Cave. It was a really sweet movie. I mean, it's not you'll be moved watching it.
I like that it didn't have a problem being dirty at times, just kind of nasty. I kind of dug that. It's adult, as you said, and we don't get enough of these. I think it's great. Other than the fact that the screener I got would not play on my PC. It pissed me off. The only way I could get it to work was to use Microsoft Edge, which is like illegal in my books, but it would not work with Google Chrome. It's great. Go see Flow. There you go.
But I'm more of a snail too. Also, I just want to say, like, I love stop motion animation. I love it. Yeah. And like, I watched 500 student shorts for Spark this year, and like maybe 3 of them were stop motion animation, and that depressed the crap out of me. So it was so nice to see like a feature length film in stop motion. And I cannot believe how long it took them to make this film. It was like, what was it, like 8 years or something?
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. All of his films, they are notoriously long because he makes them in Australia where there isn't really an industry to begin with. So, and I mean, stop motion this year was really popular because, I mean, we also had a new Aardman movie that's coming out. So, I mean, they're still making these things. It's kind of amazing.
Film schools, get on it. What the hell are you doing, man?
Oh, man.
I want to see some more student films coming out with stop motion animation. It's it's a really interesting medium, and you guys are missing the boat.
The PTSD of the Spark shorts is real. That's all I'm gonna say. Oh, my God.
Okay. And then, so another film that I actually caught up with at Heart of the City Festival, which is a festival that happens every year in the downtown east side of Vancouver. It's an arts and discussion. There's panel discussions about public policy. There's play performances. There's musical performances. And someone staged a screening of Open Your Mouth and Say, Mr. Chai Pig, a documentary about Ken Chin Chai Pig from SNFU. This is a 2010 documentary, but I had never seen it before. And we watched it at the Carnegie Center, which was also pretty awesome with a little crowd of people. And it was a really moving documentary, actually. Like, even if you're not a huge SNFU fan, Chai Pig went through a lot of stuff in his life. At one point in the film, they talk about an early performance. A fan came on stage and they bashed heads together, and it actually cracked his skull. And after that, his behavior changed quite a bit. So I don't know if it like led to brain injury or if it like kind of opened up some mental illness that was already there. But he had a lot of problems at one point. During one of the points where SNFU broke up, he became homeless. Lost everything that he had and was sort of on the streets and addicted to crystal meth. And he ended up sort of coming back from that through art, like restarting SNFU and then going back on tour and just watching like that resilience, like the resilience of his creative spirit and the resilience of coming back from like a lot of pretty dark things. Was really really touching and moving to watch that. And I don't know why it ended up on the Heart of the City program this year, because it just seems weird to me that a 14-year-old movie was on the program. But it was a good message. It was kind of an uplifting message about resilience for the festival. So it was a really great watch. If you ever have an opportunity to watch it, it's a pretty like lo-fi documentary. Like it feels very punk and very DIY, but they've got great interviews with a lot of folks from the scene. And there were lots of people that we recognized and lots of spaces that we recognized in Vancouver. So that was a really nice watch. And that's kind of it for me.
It's the glut right now. I feel the glut is real. Like there is a lot of stuff coming, but there's kind of like, I looked at what's currently playing and I'm like, I do not want to see any of this. None of this looks interesting.
It also doesn't help that we've seen every big film coming up for the next 3 months at VIFF.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Although because through the critic circle, like I'm getting screeners through it. I got one for Armand. That has it played VIFF already?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I saw VIFF.
Okay. Is it good? I haven't seen it.
It's not bad. It's not bad. She's really great in it.
Is she capable of being terrible at this point?
No, totally not. But it's not bad. It's decent.
So what's coming? Do we have anything to choose from for the next show?
Okay, so November 15th, Emilia Perez hits Netflix. It's playing locally in theaters here, which is kind of cool. I looked in when I saw Heretic, and there was 2 people in the theater. Bummer. A friend of mine saw this and said it's the worst film he's seen this year. Ladies and gentlemen, Red One. Amazon Prime is trying to
come
make
on,
a
nice.
Listen.
To, did we ever think it was going to be fucking good? Like,
come on. The beard is pretty fucking awesome. The red carpet
ripped,
beard is amazing.
Ripped Santa.
Yeah, I saw a picture of J.K. lifting weights with The Rock, and he's just ripped.
Yeah, he's Commissioner Gordon ripped again.
Yeah, I will not be seeing that one. you guys can. All We Imagine Is Light, which I saw at VIFF. It's really good. If you have a chance to see that, that'd be really good. And a Real Pain opens wide.
Oh, I'm not getting it here, but I'm excited for that one. Every time I see a trailer, it just hugs my heart. Kieran Culkin is just some kind of special, you know?
Yeah. It's opening here next week, so I can't wait to see it. November 22nd, Ridley Scott is back with Gladiator 2. Napoleon. I heard a lot about this. Heard you really like it or you really don't.
I was surprised to see some positive reviews from the early press. So I'm curious.
I already have my ticket for it.
I'm curious.
Although I have the Friday ticket for it because the next thing that Bill's probably going to bring up, I have to see The Night Before with my wife.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't want to see Wicked at all. Sorry. I just don't.
I don't know.
See everything. Wait, you can't choose.
I'm not seeing Red 1.
You can't choose not to see Wicked. What the hell?
I've heard positive stuff about Ariana Grande.
Okay.
Oh well, I'm not a huge musical theater is not really my cup of tea. I really, really liked the story when I read the book like 3 decades ago at this point. Like it feels like it was forever ago. So I like the story and I like both of these actresses, to be honest. So I'm curious. I think it looks interesting.
It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
And it's only part one.
Yeah.
What?
It's just part one. That's not part of the title.
No, they're hiding that part.
They're hiding that. This is just part one.
Oh wow. Okay. So how long is the musical?
The movie's longer. The movie's longer.
Yeah, the movie's longer.
3 days.
Yeah.
You start on like a Sunday afternoon and you get out emaciated and thinner on like Wednesday evening.
Nice. Blitz hits Apple Plus. New Steve McQueen film.
Who's did you guys hear the rumor? Steve McQueen and Bond.
I could go with that.
I could go with that too.
Yeah. Flow opens, as I said before.
Nobody's gonna see it.
Yay. I'm still gonna shout it like crazy though.
Yeah.
And The Piano Lesson hits Netflix. I thought it sucked.
I thought it was just boring. I'm just bored. And then a weird turn.
Yeah.
You're like, what movie was I watching again?
Yeah.
I'm glad Chloe didn't come to that one because she'd be like, what the fuck?
I don't know, guys. None of this sounds appealing.
Gladiator. Like,
none of this excites me.
Let's talk about Emilia Perez again. Guess what?
The music didn't work.
Or did it? I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So
okay. Oh, yeah. You haven't seen it. I totally forgot. Yeah.
I've not seen it.
Yeah.
Some of it is okay. It's just it's the transition song that really like killed it for me. Like but the performances are great. I agree. It's a weird movie. Like I'm not surprised there were two people in the theater that you saw, Bill. And
I'm honestly shocked there's anybody in the theater. Like it's such a strange sell.
If it was Penticton, there wouldn't be.
Yeah, well, I don't like. And also, if you know it's going to be on Netflix, it's another reason. Like why. You know, why would you go? But I still am really curious to see how this even does on Netflix because it's a weird musicals do not appeal to a lot of people, especially one that you've never heard of and that has this kind of subject matter. So,
So Wicked it is. How about that?
All right. Boom. Done.
Real pain.
If Steve can see it.
Can't get it.
I doubt I'll be able to see it, but.
Can we not agree on anything right now and just circle back on it? I'm just like looking at my head around this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's either gonna be Gladiator or Wicked or Blitz. I don't know. Yeah,
maybe we can just talk about disclaimer. How about that?
The series disclaimer. Well, I watched episode one yesterday, and I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. It gets
really interesting. Like episode five is like, what the fuck? And apparently it wraps yesterday, I think. I'm still a few episodes behind, but apparently that ending is something else. So I'm curious. Okay.
I haven't watched it, but a friend of mine texted me and she was like, episode three was really, 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 really sexy.
The show's hot. Like,
yeah.
Okay, look at that cast. I mean, it's hard not to be hot when you have that cast.
And tonight's the finale of The Penguin, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And episode one of season five, part two of Yellowstone.
It's already on Paramount Plus. We still haven't seen it.
Oh, it did. It was it like it a midnight dropped early. Edition? Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently, because we logged in yesterday to watch Frasier and it was there. And I'm like, I'll watch this another day.
Okay. I'm behind in a lot of stuff. I just finished Sweet Tooth and Outer Range last night. So
Outer Range is so good.
I'm so mad.
So am I.
So mad.
So am I.
How do you end after that? Are you?
You don't, but nobody was watching it.
So mad. And just like, I said this on my earlier podcast recording. Give Will Patton anything, and he will make it the most mesmerizing monologue you've seen on screen.
But I mean, that show is batshit. Like, you try to explain that show to anybody.
And I can't.
Who are you going to sell it to? Like, who's going to watch this thing?
Season two takes a really weird present in season one, and it normalizes it to every of your main characters. They just talk about it as like a normal thing. And you're like, wait, you just said jumping through the hole and all this weird shit. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? This isn't normal yet, guys.
It's so good. It's solid.
It feels like it has very deep Lynch Frost Twin Peaks-ness embedded in it.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks is the show that had to be birthed out of the primordial ooze for so many shows that we have now. Just so much.
Yeah. Amazon actually did try to push this for awards the first season, so when it came out, and they sent out these like really beautiful packages with like just gorgeous cinematography. And that's what got me to watch the show. Cause I was like curious, and I'm like, okay, maybe we should really watch. And it's so good, but nobody else watched it. So we get two seasons and you know, it just doesn't end properly.
No. Imogen Poots alone is the reason to watch that show.
Yeah. She's great.
Fucking love her.
I just finished some show you guys might have heard of. I just finished season three of Industry. It's pretty good.
Industry is amazing. And it was the show that nobody was talking about
until season three.
Until Succession finally ended.
And then everybody's like, you need
it. And then they're like, well, what next? And you're like, this show has been here for two seasons and nobody paid attention to it. And it has so much cutthroat craziness to it.
Okay, but let's be honest. Like, I've seen like three episodes out of season one. It doesn't start off great. Like, it's okay.
It's complicated. It's not complicated.
It's an easy show, Marina.
It's a vastly complicated show.
Yeah, it's a hard sell. Like, three episodes in, I was like, I don't know. Is this really as good? I don't know.
I think the feeling that you haven't given up on it means that you will continue to go through because it will start opening itself up to you, but it is fucking complicated. There's a lot of shit going on immediately.
I also think that Eric might be my favorite character on television. I just love that guy. He's such a piece of shit, but I love him.
I love that Ken Leung is getting like a good push in something.
Yeah it's so good
because again, Lost, he's really great on Lost. Miles on Lost, and then he just shows up here and there.
All of this, we still haven't picked a movie. Which
you're not going to get one. That's such a hard choice. I think the closest one is Gladiator 2, but it's just me.
Well, let's discuss off air and figure out what. I will bow down to whatever the group decides. It is what it is.
I really want a real pain. Yeah, you guys know that, but it's just probably not in the realm of possibility for me.
Okay, well, between now and then, where can folks find you?
I am Bill Harris. I think I'm getting rid of my Twitter account because of reasons.
Finally!
And I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam69. And yeah, have a good couple
of weeks. Putting us on a group text. That's how we're going to communicate from now on.
Okay.
No more X. Thank God. Okay.
No. Yeah, fuck Elon Musk.
Getting a little toxic in that place, eh?
Oh, you think? Every time I log in to message you guys, I'm like, look at nothing else. You can find me on Letterboxd at The Marina and on Instagram at The Marina 2.
And you can find me on Letterboxd at Melzy.
I am at Letterboxd, Threads, and Instagram at The Steeple Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. On there, I do a show with my daughter, Chloe, every week called What the Hell Should I Watch? We release that every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I'm also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. Our latest two episodes are on Perfect Blue and Black Swan.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. I'd never seen Perfect Blue before covering it for the podcast. So
pretty cool.
So anime is the thing that's I have a hard foothold. Like some of them are really hard for me to get into. But Perfect Blue is, I feel like, pretty broad enough that
any Satoshi Kon, you're going to be safe with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tekken Concrete, which is Chef's Kiss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen that one before. And I am also on Shane Hewitt and the Night Shift on the iHeartRadio Network every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And then you can catch it on the iHeartRadio Network over that weekend. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. So you can catch, we'll link to all the things we talked about today on the website at atcpod.ca. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another show. Until then.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
Bye.